The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Michigan Radio. Remember, this election, you have important choices to make up and down the ballot. Besides the presidential contest, there are decisions to make on statewide offices, ballot proposals, and local races. And Michigan Radio and NPR can help with accurate information and nuanced perspectives on the issues. It's your state and your vote. Be informed with Michigan Radio, Michigan's NPR news leader. And you can find out a lot more at michiganradio.org. Greetings, everybody. Happy Monday. Well, maybe not a happy Monday if you're a Wolverines or Lions fan, but it is indeed Monday, the day before the election. And we're not going to get all political about who should be in office, but we are going to talk about whether or not certain coaches should still have their jobs. My guest every Monday to break down the weekend in football is my friend Pat Batchelor, morning anchor at WDET, Detroit Public Radio. And Pat, for football fans this weekend, it was either a glasses half full weekend if you're a Spartans fan, or a glasses completely empty, dry, has never had a drop in it if you're a Wolverines and Lions fan this week. It's not looking good at all for either program at the moment. First of all, welcome, sir. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. I'm going to have to talk to my doctor about upping my Zoloft dosage or something.
I mean, come on. Let's start with, we'll get to the Lions in a little bit, because the big game this weekend was obviously Michigan versus Michigan State. The Paul Bunyan Trophy is headed back to East Lansing. Couches are aflame at Cedar Village. Michigan State pulls off the improbable win, although I will never say improbable in a rivalry game, especially with these two teams, because Michigan State came ready to play. They were fired up. They were angry, and they beat the crap out of the Wolverines.
Yeah, they did. And when we talked last week, you know, we knew that Michigan was a heavy favorite, but I said then I wasn't going to predict anything because, A, it's 2020, you can't predict anything anymore, and B, it is a rivalry game. And I fully expected a close game. I fully expected State to put forth its best effort because this is their big game. This is the rivalry game for Michigan State. There isn't anybody on the planet they want to beat more than Michigan. And, you know, great job by them. Great job by Coach Mel Tucker to get them prepared, get them ready for the biggest game that a lot of those youngsters have played. I mean, you know, Rocky Lombardi in his second game as the full-time starter for this season, was just, you know, he was patient. He was poised. He had all day to throw because the offensive line, which was depleted somewhat, was still able to dominate what was supposed to be a pretty good Michigan defensive line.
Well, Pat, one of the things that was clearly exposed was Michigan's secondary. So therefore, the Michigan couldn't run the same schemes they normally would in a game like that, where they bring a lot of quarterback pressure because they needed everybody possible to help in the backfield. Mr. Gray, his first name escapes me, had one of the worst days. Vincent Green had one of the worst days at corner that I've seen in a long time. And not to knock on the young guy, Michigan is depleted back there, but Michigan State had a great game plan and they exploited that weakness in one of the worst ways I've ever seen Michigan get exploited back there.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I mean, it was just a great coaching job, great preparation. Hats off to the Spartans. This was no cheap victory by any means.
No Spartan Bob here. No trouble with the snap. Nope. This was just an old-fashioned butt whooping in the trenches.
Absolutely, and that's where you win the game, is in the trenches. And Michigan was dominated on both sides of the line. And you know how that's possible 6 years into Jim Harbaugh's tenure is absolutely beyond me. And it's inexcusable.
Well, and let's talk about that for just a second, because the national press is beginning to pile on Jim Harbaugh in a way that they haven't before. Like I said, if Michigan wants to go all in on a football team and start paying Nick Saban money, you should be able to expect Nick Saban results. What I question, Pat, is whether or not the University of Michigan is willing to go all in on what you have to do if you want to be one of those perennial top five, top 10 programs. I'm not convinced they do. And if they don't, that's okay, because I think football has, you know, it's way out of proportion right now in college sports. And if you want to be one of those programs, there are things that are going to be less than clean, shall we say, if you want to get to that level. And if Michigan doesn't want to do that, then tell us that. but let's put somebody in there at a reasonable rate of pay that is, you know, going to get the same results, because we're paying how much, what, $9 million a year or some nonsense? And Jim Harbaugh just has not delivered the way that Michigan fans expected and hoped.
No, absolutely. And, you know, he doesn't even necessarily have to get Nick Saban results. I mean, you know, I personally don't care if they, you know, win national championships. I'd settle for a Big Ten championship every now and again. They haven't won that in almost 20 years. And they used to win it, you know, somewhat regularly, you know, back when we were in college. You know, they would at least beat Ohio State at least every other year, and you know, with the occasional upset here and there, they would typically pummel Michigan State into the ground. That was the norm. I don't know if we're ever going to see that again. You know, last year's beatdown now looks more like a fluke than anything else. I don't know how Michigan managed to win that game by 34 points, but you know, but they're not even in the same universe as Ohio State. And not
many teams are. That's the point I was trying to make. I mean, you know, there are a few programs like that, LSU, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, that are going to be up there every year and are going to do whatever it takes to make sure their program gets there when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to taking chances on players and putting up with a certain level of problems within your program. I'm not positive that Michigan wants to be that university. If they want to take the more Notre Dame approach, where we say, hey, academics still matter here, we're going to put a competitive team on the field, but hey, our days of national championships probably are behind us. I don't know. I mean, I think that things are so out of whack in college football, but Michigan's expectations are that we're going to be one of those programs. I don't think they have the wherewithal or the stomach to actually do what it takes, because what it takes is not good.
Well, but they better get the guts to do it, because that, you know, people are going to stop, you know, you can only lose to Ohio State by 30 every year for so long before people get tired and say, no, enough. If this is what you got to do, then do it. And I've seen people, you know, I've seen some of the pundits say, well, Notre Dame is able to do it and they don't have to lower their academic standards. Well, you know, that's not an apt comparison, because number one, Notre Dame, except for this year, when they've basically, you know, embraced being a member of the ACC, albeit temporarily, historically Notre Dame schedules whoever they want to play, and they usually schedule teams that they can easily beat. They don't have a conference championship game to worry about. And, you know, because of their reputation, because they're Notre Dame, if they have a 10-1 or 11-1 record, they're automatically going to be in the playoff. But when they get to the playoff, they get run off the field in the first quarter. And not only that, speaking of which, you know, if you're going to compare the two programs, the last time I checked, Michigan's grounds crew was still picking up pieces of Irish entrails from the disemboweling they got last year. So,
yeah. I get that. But, you know, when you're talking about whether or not to hire somebody like Jim Harbaugh or keep him on the job, for me, it's a simple question of economics. This guy's not worth what we're paying him.
No.
And if this is the results that you're comfortable with as a university, bring somebody in that is more commensurate with that, because you're paying Nick Saban money to a guy that is not Nick Saban or Urban Meyer or anybody else of that caliber. He's just not.
No, he's
not. His brother might have been the guy. You never know. I mean, I'm looking at what the Ravens are doing this year. He might have been the right hire, but you never know.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll never know that. But you know, the only other option Michigan would have, you know, if they want, you know, the kind of results that Notre Dame gets, is become an independent, leave the Big Ten, schedule the lower ranks of the Power Five conferences, maybe throw in a MAC team here and there or a service academy, and just, you know, load up on cupcakes the way the Fighting Irish do. You know, with Michigan's reputation, they could probably sell that because they've been around as long as Notre Dame.
I think we learned a lot, though, about Michigan. Joe Milton, of course, is starting his second game at quarterback at Michigan. He's got some issues with the deep throws. He's just got to settle down a little bit. I mean, he puts so much mustard on the ball every time he throws it. And frankly, there was not good spacing by the receivers. There were a bunch of plays that looked like they were just sort of confused out there. He will settle in. I think he's got some good skills, and I think he's going to get better. But this year, you know, it's going to be a learning year for this guy. And he's going to take his lumps a little bit, I have a feeling.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a fair expectation. I think people who are, comparing him to the next Cam Newton, well, that's just ridiculous. I mean, he's started, this is his first full year as a starter. Yeah, he's going to have a learning curve. I don't really think he played all that badly on Saturday. I'd rather have him overthrow receivers than underthrow and get picked off. And I don't think he's thrown an interception yet. Maybe I missed one, but, I'd like to see him do more things with his feet. He started to get some runs there. If he saw an opening and didn't see a receiver open, he would turn up the field and he would get good yardage. You know, he'd create positive plays with his feet. He just needs to be more confident in his ability to do that. As far as his receivers, none of these guys is Nico Collins. None of these guys is Donovan Peoples-Jones. You know, they have a little bit of speed. But they don't really have good hands. Yeah, I know Milton throws the ball pretty hard, but look, if you're a receiver, you got to catch balls
yes.
that are thrown your way. And, with the drops that we saw, and that offensive line. Yeah, I know that, they're still learning. I thought, the way they coalesced in the first game against Minnesota, it was impressive. I was surprised by that result. But they just get tossed around because they're so much smaller and less physical than a team like Michigan State.
Well, interesting thing about Michigan State, though, they opened up the season with a loss to Rutgers, which everybody just assumed was the end of the world. This is clearly a better Rutgers team than we expected, although they got manhandled by Indiana, who Michigan gets to play next week. Indiana's looking like they might be pretty darn good over in the West.
Yeah, and they're playing with house money, really, because,
yes.
Nobody expects Indiana to do anything. So, they can play loose, they can play relaxed, and not have to worry about what expectations there are, because for Indiana, the bar, as Marty Morningweg might say, is low. And I think the expectations are still somewhat low because for whatever reason, Michigan is at the moment a 3.5-point favorite in that game. It's at Indiana. Indiana knocked off Penn State, which is still a pretty good team. I mean, yeah, they're 0-2. They didn't get blown out by Ohio State. I mean, they still were somewhat competitive for at least part of that game. So it's not like the Nittany Lions are a lousy team. Maybe not as good as people thought they were, but, Indiana, I'm not a betting man. If I were, I would not only bet on Indiana to cover, but to win outright. It just shows that odds makers don't actually watch college football. They're just basically, oh, Michigan, Indiana, they just automatically default to Michigan because, it's Michigan and Indiana. And of course, Michigan, has won like 90% of the games in that series, but you got to throw all that out. This is a different year. Indiana, they're fired up. They're enthused. They love Tom Allen, their head coach. And I think that also is something that comes back to Harbaugh. The Indiana players, I mean, they would run through a wall for Tom Allen. They may not have as much talent as some of the other teams in the conference, but they're all in. They're behind him 100%. I don't think that's present at Michigan. I mean, it's not that they don't like Harbaugh. I think they probably like him, but they don't love him. They'll do what he asks, but no more.
Well, I think Mel Tucker just earned a lot of that type of respect in the locker room with his game plan the other day. And winning your first game against Michigan goes a long way in cementing you in that role for a while at Michigan State. You keep beating Michigan, you could lose the rest of your games, and the fans will love you in East Lansing. And so what a huge win for him to start his Spartan career. I'm sure they'd rather be 2-0 than 1-1. But beating Michigan for Mel Tucker was huge.
Absolutely.
And Michigan State, given everything they've been through the last few years with everything that's gone on at the university, they needed this.
Yeah, they did. And as I said, I've got no problem with it. As far as they're concerned, they did what they had to do. It was very well executed, very well coached. They deserve all the credit.
Absolutely. Well, all right. So Michigan's going to have an interesting ride the rest of the season. This game next week in Indiana is going to tell us a lot about their resilience. We will be watching it, of course. But Jim Harbaugh's got to be feeling the heat right now. And I can't imagine Don Brown is not also feeling a little bit of pressure. The question is, will Harbaugh sacrifice one of his assistants before he gets fired himself?
Well, we'll have to see how that works out. You know, I mean, this game against Indiana, I don't think really tells us too much. You know, it doesn't matter what happens the rest of the way, because you know they're going to get smoked again in Columbus. That's not a prediction; it's just a fact. They have no hope of beating Ohio State. They have no hope of even competing with Ohio State. So it doesn't really matter what happens in between. People point to the fact that, well, you know, when you take out the home record against Michigan State and Ohio State, which is 1-6, they're 29-0 against everyone else. Well, when you tell me that, you're basically telling me the same that, you know, the Lions were 4-0 in the preseason. It doesn't matter. Those games don't matter. They mean nothing.
Well, nice transition there, because let's talk about the Lions yesterday. You know, last week we were both sort of like, okay, comeback victory, you know, that was unexpected, sort of, you know, a lucky one. You pull it out of your rear and you move on, and you're 500 and you're still in the picture here. Clearly the Indianapolis Colts have a pretty good team. Phillip Rivers was operating on all cylinders yesterday is what I'm trying to say. Had a great game against the Lions. I'm telling you what. The Colts look good. The Lions were just overmatched all day long, especially on the offensive line. Matt Stafford was under pressure the whole day. And, of course, with Kenny Golladay going down early in the game and him not being in there, what a difference he makes. The Lions just – they weren't able to muster any type of offensive they couldn't get anything going yesterday. It was pretty ugly.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, you can put the blame on the offensive line partly for that. For, you know, I mean, they didn't protect Stafford that well. They didn't open any holes for the running backs, who are not all that great themselves to begin with. Marvin Jones, he had a pretty nice game, but. And I'm not sure how good the Colts really are. I mean, they have an excellent defense. They just, you know, there's no question about that. Phillip Rivers, I mean, he's not the same guy that he was. He has struggled at times this season, but yesterday he looked like, you know, he looked like the best quarterback in the world against the Lions defense, which at times I think played well, especially early on. But the more they're out there, as they were yesterday, you know, if the offense can't keep the ball on the field, if the defense has to play as much as the Lions defense does, well, there are going to be some lapses here and there.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, they were out on the field basically the entire first half. And you could tell at the end of the game when the Lions needed a stop and they still had a chance, the defense could not keep the Colts off the field. And therefore, you know, Matt Stafford was forced to throw. They can sit in the passing lanes, get a pick six like they did. The first one I've seen from Stafford in quite a while, as a matter of fact. And the team just looked out of sorts. They weren't not playing particularly well. And I thought the defense actually did pretty well, given how long they were out there. They were pretty good against the run. Now, granted, the running game for the Colts isn't that great, but they were doing a pretty good job with that, but they could not get those crucial third down stops. And you know, when it's demoralizing when the other team's got a third and eight and they pick up the nine they need to keep the drive going. It's grinding.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, definitely. And, it's hard to watch a game like that sometimes. I wasn't really too surprised with the result.
No, I was picking this as a loss anyway. It was a little demoralizing in how lopsided it actually was.
Yeah, yeah. And it got out of hand later in the game.
And here's the thing that's really, really aggravating about it is the Lions lost an opportunity to pick up a game on the Packers, who lost to the Vikings. Which just tells you the NFL, you don't know what's going to happen week to week. There's a level of parity in the NFL that doesn't exist clearly in college football.
Right.
Every team has got some talent. The Lions could have been a game behind Green Bay, putting themselves in a pretty good position, and they just didn't really show up yesterday. So as a Lions fan, this is something that I've come to expect. Mm-hmm. It's not something I like about my Lions, but it's certainly something that I am used to at this point.
Well, sure. And not only that, I mean, they could have also picked up a game on the Bears, who are just a complete mess against New Orleans.
I did not watch that game. I'm glad.
I saw part of it. I saw the part where one of the Bears receivers just, you know, cold cocked a Saints defender, and a melee broke out. That stemmed from an earlier incident where said Bear got a finger jammed in his eye. You know, but I mean, just the lack of, I mean, just the lack of discipline, the lack of focus, and the poor play of people, especially, you know, Nick Foles. I mean, we're seeing his limitations as a quarterback. I mean, the Bears are a hot mess, but they're 5-3. You know, I mean.
And the Lions would have been a half game behind them and a game behind Green Bay. And they blew an opportunity.
Well, they blew an opportunity, but also not only would they be they'd be a half game ahead of the Bears if they had beaten the Bears.
That's true.
You know, the Bears would be 4-4, the Lions would be 4-3, and they'd be right there behind Green Bay.
Well, and they did beat the Bears, but pass kept it from happening.
And the weird thing is this, as bad as yesterday was, you know, they're 3-4. Their next two games are winnable. The Vikings, and then Washington. And here's the thing.
Depends on which team shows up. The Vikings sometimes look great, other times look horrible.
Well, the one thing that the Vikings and the Lions have in common is that they have not won a home game yet this season. The Lions are 3-1 on the road. For whatever reason, they play better on the road than they do at Ford Field this season. If they win that game, they come home and find a way to beat Washington, which has not won a game on the road. Guess what? 2 weeks from now, they're 5-4 if they win those games.
I know. I'm still sitting on 7-9. I'm still sitting on 7-9 for the season. This is what I predict. But who knows? Hey, real quick, before I forget about this, I did want to ask you one thing about the Michigan State game. And I don't want to lay this on the officials, because I think Michigan State outplayed Michigan and had a much better game plan. But man, now whose fault is it that third down completion that kept the drive alive, Michigan State went on to score a touchdown on that drive? Whose responsibility is it to make sure that that call gets reviewed? Was that on Harbaugh and his staff for not calling a timeout to look at that? Because that changed the complexion of the game.
Yeah.
That was an incomplete pass.
And you know, I'm not sure. I think the officials are supposed to look at those things, but I don't know if it's a booth initiated review at that point of the game or not. In any case, you know, Harbaugh or somebody on his staff should have challenged it.
Yeah.
And they didn't, and that's on them. You know, as far as the refs go, look, they called a very, very tight game. I mean, Michigan, you know, if they even breathed too closely to a Michigan State player, you know, if there was contact, they called it. And that's fair. You know, I mean, they went by the letter of the law. You look at those fouls and you think, well, you know, that it's unfortunate they were called, but they weren't wrong. I mean, the calls weren't wrong. The guys were holding. They were tight. That's what they do. But you know, it's the way that you do it. If you turn around, if you're going for the ball, and you make it, you know, at least look like you're going for the ball, you can sometimes get away with that. The refs were having none of it, not with Michigan and not with Michigan State, although State didn't commit that many penalties. So I don't blame the refs at all. I mean,
I think it's on Harbaugh. I think it's on Harbaugh and his staff to make sure that that call gets reviewed.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Call a timeout, you know, and I understand you're trying to save them, but this is, what a better use of a timeout would there be than to have somebody look at that play?
Yeah, because I mean, if that gets ruled incomplete, you know, I think it would have been fourth down.
Yeah, it would have been 4th and 8. They would, in their own zone, they would have punted, and Michigan would have had the chance to take the lead. Granted, their offense would have had to do something, but you know, ifs and buts, right? Isn't that what they say?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens next weekend. You know, again, Michigan's got that Indiana game, and Indiana's been so close to beating Michigan a few times the last few years, and I have a feeling this might be the year that they get it done. I hope not, but it's entirely possible. And the Lions and the Vikings, you know what? This will be one of those where I write off the Lions and assume they're going to lose, and then they'll pull out some weird victory that gives me hope once again. I don't know. It's a frustrating world we live in at times, Patrick.
Well, yes, it is, for sure. But, you know, hey, look again. You know, I mean, they beat the Vikings. They beat Washington. They're 5-4.
Well, you know who should be happy today? The people at the Gardner White Furniture Store in East Lansing, because there's a whole bunch of people that need new couches today.
Yes.
So, good day for the sales team at the furniture store in East Lansing today.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it right there. Pat Batchelor, we always appreciate having you with us, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And again, Pat Batchelor is the morning host at WDET Detroit Public Radio. He joins me each Monday during football season. And he does this for free out of the goodness of his heart, which I appreciate very much, to talk about the Lions, the Wolverines, the Spartans, and next week, Mac football back on the agenda, which we're excited about. So with that, we will say goodbye on this Monday. Certainly do appreciate you being with me today. Don't forget, if you want to comment or anything about what we're doing here on the show, send me an email, thecraigfolleyshow@gmail.com. It's really simple, thecraigfolleyshow@gmail.com. Or send me a message on social media. You know where I am. I'm on Facebook. The show has got a Facebook page as well. You can also look me up on Instagram, on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit these days for some reason. Maybe that's just because I'm getting old. And I'm also available on Twitter, of course, in all those different locations. While I've got a moment, big thanks to Michigan Radio for their sponsorship of Deadline Detroit and, of course, of the Craig Folley Show on Deadline Detroit. We appreciate that. Tune into Michigan Radio for great election night coverage that's coming up. There is so much that we need to think about as we get ready to vote. And keep this in mind as well. On Tuesday night, that's tomorrow night, I will be up. I'll be on Facebook watching the results come in. We'll see how quickly they come in. We might get some results pretty early. We may have an indication as to which way this country is leaning on Tuesday night. That would be nice. Not sure if that's going to be the case. A lot of it depends on how quickly the votes get counted in a number of states that have allowed for later counts, etc. But we may know something. But I'll be up. So if you want to join me, I'll have a thread going more than likely as we look at the states come in and all that good stuff. I love election night. It is definitely chew your fingernails time. It is definitely be nervous time, depending on either candidate. If you're a supporter of either candidate, you're nervous right now because this is it. This is it. A lot of stuff's going to be decided in the next day, and just trying to stay calm while it all happens. But feel free to either commiserate or celebrate with me. It's fine. I'd love to have you. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm going to have some final thoughts as we head to the polls tomorrow on tomorrow's show. Maybe just to calm everybody down a little bit. I've been thinking about this for a few days. What do I want to say? And so I'm going to think about that all day today, and I'll have that for you tomorrow. And, of course, Wednesday, we'll break down what we know at that point in time. So I'm looking forward to a great week of shows. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll talk again tomorrow. The Craig Folley Show is made possible in part by Deadline Detroit. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in the city. We're asking you to support independent local journalism by joining our $3 a month membership. By joining, you become eligible to win prizes, including tickets for sporting events and gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Just go to our website and click the ad at the top or go to www.deadlinedetroit.com/membership.